It's Lynn Rossetto Casper with The Splendid Table. Well, today it's all Italy. The Italy I love, and no, it's not Tuscany, may my family forgive me. To celebrate our 10th anniversary, I'm taking you to Feast Central. Ask an Italian where to eat one meal in Italy, and after touting her mother's house, she'll probably send you to the northern region of Emilia-Romagna. Now, this hour, it's Emilia-Romagna's two world-class foods, and they can happen only here. Parmigiano Reggiano and that elixir, the true balsamic vinegar. We do dessert with Lucrezia Borgia and Ferrara, and I'm taking you to my favorite guest farm and restaurant to meet an extraordinary pioneer. So stay with us. It's Road Trip Italian Style. We've got great people and great food coming up on The Splendid Table. But first, this.
Thank you.
It's Lynn Rossetto Casper, and you're listening to The Splendid Table, the show for people who love to eat. Our program is produced by American Public Media and brought to you by Super Target. Well, today we're marking our 10th year on the air with a special show. It's up close and personal in the Italy I love, the part of Italy most Americans zip through on their way to Florence. Now, the region I'm talking about sits between Venice and Florence, and it's so little known that in 1982, when I first started researching there, even some food pros thought that I was talking about an opera singer. The region is Emilia-Romagna, where Parmigiano Reggiano, Parma ham, and balsamic vinegar reign. Now, we're digging into Parmigiano and balsamic in a bit, but first, I want to take you to Ferrara. Now, in 1983, on a fast drive through, the city of Ferrara looked boring. Now, it sits kind of in the middle of nowhere on the Po River. You have the monolith castle, a nice cathedral, but not much else. Then I ate. Now, my first meal was goose breast prosciutto and then big klutzy pastas of sweet pumpkin. Not your usual Emilia-Romagna material. And, of course, there's a story on that plate. Goose prosciutto was there because in 1275, the Dukes of Ferrara became protectors of the Jews. And, of course, the Jews couldn't eat prosciutto made from pig. Now, the large Jewish community that evolved made its food's local hallmarks. That pasta, called cappellacci con la zucca and served everywhere in town, is straight out of the Renaissance, when sweet and savory was constantly played against each other. And this was the time when the Dukes of Ferrara controlled this pivotal political territory. You know, the past is so much a part of the present, especially for me in Ferrara. And the foods, well, they're always part of the story, like in the bakery across from the cathedral. When you walk into a bakery in Ferrara, it's, I know this sounds corny, but it sounds like you can walk into the past, because what you see is so many of the things that are recorded in these cookbooks from the 1500s. For instance, over here, there's this spice bread. It's kind of, I don't know, about an inch high. It looks like a low-lying mud pie, and it's called pan pepato, and it means spiced bread. And it's really one of the ancestors of the fruitcake. And it's done with spices and candied fruits and now chocolate. Chocolate came later. But this was begun, like, in the 1500s. And it's traditionally eaten at Christmas. They sell it all year. And then the other thing you always see here is something called torta a tagliatelle. And what it is a sweet pie crust. It's a tart. And in the tart is a mixture of ground almonds and egg and sugar. And then on top of it is thin sliced fresh pasta. And that'll be baked. Now, supposedly, this was made in the early 1500s for Lucrezia Borgia's wedding. It was one of the sweets that was designed to celebrate her marriage to the future Duke of Ferrara. And supposedly, the golden pasta that's made of egg and flour that's on the top was emulating her golden hair. I don't know if it's true. Are you... Lei... Questo è il suo negozio?
Sì.
Ah, this gentleman... Are you suo nome?
Sì. Paganelli.
Paganelli, Signor Paganelli.
Paganelli
is the owner of the pasticceria, and we're right across from the cathedral, which means that he must have a very good store because he's in a prime location. Oh, sentito, I had heard that the torta di tagliatelle had been made for Lucrezia Borgia.
Sì, può essere, molto, può essere vero, sì.
È una storia molto buona.
È una storia molto buona. Sicuramente è un dolce molto buono.
Va bene, va bene. He's saying whether or not it's true, it's very possible, and it certainly is a delicious sweet. Thank
Bye.
You.
Bye.
Molto grazie.
Arrivederci.
Now, another Renaissance dish that you have to have in Ferrara is the domed macaroni pie. This is pasta with wild mushrooms and meat ragu and cream sauce, and it's all under a golden dome of sweet pastry. Now, I've got that recipe for you and one for the chocolate Christmas spice cake. Remember pan pepato? It's part of our blowout holiday menu from Emilia-Romagna, and it's on the website, splendidtable.org. You know, one of my rules when traveling in Italy is never spend all your appetite in one place. Now, you have to be flexible. You never know what you're going to find on the street.
This is the nut stand. All over Italy, you see these stands, especially in the evening or on weekends, and you've got all kinds of nuts, and he's got essentially, it looks like a cotton candy, heated little stove, and there's nuts that have been rolled in honey and in sugar and salt. And it's a snack bar, essentially. And it's old fair food. You would have had this at fairs and that kind of thing, church holidays. Chocolates, too. Chocolates are new and classy. Toroni. Oh, let's get some Toroni. This was Easter at my house. It's a long rectangle, and it's white. And what it is it's like taffy. It's like taffy with big hunks of almonds in it. And it's called Toroni. And this is morbido. Morbido means soft. It's like nougat. It's like nougat or taffy. And it's really great. And this is the soft one, because otherwise you break your teeth. You know, I want to go around the corner for a gelato. And one of the things you have to know about Italy and gelato is that when you look at the sign, it should say these two words, produzione propria, and that means that we're making it ourselves. So, and it should be the place where everybody's going to get gelato.
Gelateria, okay.
Honeydew?
No, green apple. Green apple. There's
pistachio.
You want pistachio? I want crema. Crema is always my. Signora, è possibile assaggiare un po' della crema? Va bene, un po'. I've asked her if I could have a taste of the crema. The crema is like pure vanilla. È buonissima. Io vorrei un piccolo di crema.
Solo di crema?
Un crema e un stracciatella. I'm not sure, but it's the one with the chocolate chips. Oh, fiori di latte is fabulous. It's the flower of the milk. It's
okay,
like cream.
So what's
pampapato is the cake that we saw that is the local cake with the nuts and the fruits, and it was made for the Pope in the 1500s. And it's a gelato. Why don't you have it?
All right.
Okay. Banana e un momento, perché questa è una grande decisione. I just said to her, this is a big decision. That's a great one to order. Banana e nocciole, per favore. Do you know that certain experts judge a gelateria by its hazelnut? So you show the signs of a connoisseur.
Now, I've got to butt in here. I've got to tell you why hazelnuts are so telling. It's simple. Hazelnuts go stale in no time, and stale hazelnuts mean a lazy gelato maker. Welcome to my picky, picky world. You know, in Italy, even with supermarkets all over the place, the old central markets are still buzzing. And some Italians still shop for groceries every day. In fact, some even shop twice a day. And with shops like theirs, who could resist shopping twice a day?
This is the Via Pescheri Vecchi, the street of the old fishermen. And it's the main marketplace in Bologna. It's been the main marketplace probably since the Romans. And each shop specializes. So, for instance, over here is the shop where they have probably 300 different cheeses, most of them Italian, but probably from all over Europe. This is the vegetable stand, and you're going to see red onions fresh pulled from the earth. They still have all their roots on them. Here's a long... it's a squeaky, green, plump-looking, long grass, and it grows by the sea, and it's called the beard of the priest, and that'll be served with seafood. There's tomatoes still on their vines. So here's all the fresh fruit, and they have the violet artichokes of Tuscany. They're long, oval artichokes, bright, well, purple and green. So this is very typical. And then you have usually a pharmacy. And then over here, now here's something I've not seen before. This is the poultry shop and butcher shop. And here's pre-packaged chicken breasts, commercially packaged, just as we see in supermarkets in the United States. But next to it is essentially a side of very young pig, and they'll cut this to order. There are still butchers who are cutting meat to order. Here are tortellini for sale, more cheeses. And then, of course, there's always the coffee shop. And no, there's no place to sit down, because the idea is you're shopping, you stand up, toss down a cup of coffee, and then you move on. Over here, you have fruit now, and tomatoes. Now, these tomatoes are all going to be coming from the south, but they're marked Sicily. You always have the origin marked here. You have Sicily on the tomatoes. You have Puglia on some of the tomatoes. This is all southern Italy. Over here, you have Lazio. This is the area around Rome, and these are the cucumbers from Lazio. It's a law in Italy that you must state on the label the grade and also where it comes from. The fish store is right to my left. Now, at the fish store, everything is gleaming. Now, the fish are whole, they're on ice, and you can see the most important thing, because the way you know the fish is really fresh is you look at the eyes. You can see if the eyes are cloudy, it's not fresh. If the eyes are bright and clear, it is fresh. We've got fresh sardines, and these would be either pickled or they'd be deep fried, and they are so good deep fried. And then we have tiny fresh anchovies. They're as long as your pinky or maybe your next finger. And you would put that into lemon and olive oil and salt, or again, you deep fry them and you eat them like popcorn. There's over here, there's fresh squid, and it says it comes from the Adriatic, not from anywhere else. The Adriatic is about an hour's drive or 2 hours drive from where we are. And then one of my all-time favorite fish. It's a shellfish. It looks like a small flat lobster tail with eyes at one end, and it's called canocci, and it's from the Adriatic as well, and it's sweet like lobster, and you just simply poach it very lightly. There's shrimp with the heads on, and there are true scampi. Now, scampi are not shrimp. Scampi are a tiny, tiny member of, well, I guess they're a member of the crayfish family. So you've got the butcher shop, you've got the vegetable shop, you have the cheese shop, and then there's always going to be one shop in the market that does nothing but canned and jarred foods. And that's where they call them conserva, meaning they've all been preserved. And this is all along one street. So this is what the supermarket has been, essentially, in Italy for centuries.
That was the Via Pescevecchi, the Street of the Old Fisherman in Bologna. Coming up, vinegar a father makes for his son, and the legendary Villa Gaidello. I'm Lynn Rossetto Casper, and you're listening to The Splendid Table from American Public Media. I'm Lynn Rossetto Casper, and this is The Splendid Table, the show about life's appetites. Our show is brought to you by SuperTarget, one-stop shopping for groceries, cookware, and entertaining. You can visit them online at target.com/SuperTarget. The guest farm, Villa Gaidello, is my dropout place, the place I go to rebalance with my friend Paola Bini. And for all I've written about Paola and this place, I still haven't found the right words. Gaidello is all Paola, serene, welcoming, and quietly yet fiercely itself. There's no self-consciousness here. It's an organic farm that takes guests and makes meals, and it's now been written about all over Europe. The farm women cook, and everything you see and touch is handmade by locals. But then there's Paola, 70-something, small, slender,
always with a piece of jewelry you don't expect, like the rhinestone buckle on her belt that says, I am what I am. She's a direct person. She's a woman with a mission.
We're in the courtyard of Villa Gaidello. It's a sunny morning, and drifting among the trees, we're surrounded by big trees, we're in the middle of farmland outside of the city of Modena, and drifting from the trees are these little white specks, and if it weren't spring, it would look like it was snowing. And I'm sitting with my old friend Paola Bini. Paola created Villa Gaidello. Paola, it's good to be back.
Tu sai quanto ho avuto piacere di vederti.
Grazie. Paola, can you explain to me what is Villa Gaidello for you?
Io credo che è come un figlio.
I believe it is like a child. Because it's been 30 years. It's not a season, it's 30 years. More than 30 years. It is a life, like with a child. I've helped it grow and be what it is.
Paolo, what is the philosophy behind Gaidello? I would love to know how you began this. I'd love to know the story of how it started.
Non è una filosofia.
Non è una filosofia.
No.
Not a philosophy.
È un istinto. È un bisogno.
It's an instinct. It's a need.
Allora, dunque, come abbiamo cominciato? Che la sorella mia è sorella della sua mamma.
Oh, my sister, Adriana Luce Chiara. Now she's in paradise. Possibly she's here with us. Anyway, she had traveled a great deal, was very intelligent, but most of all she was open and she was always looking ahead. When this farm of our family was left to we sisters, I didn't want to sell. We had to find a way to keep it. I wanted to work the land. That's me, always attached to the land. Adriana thought of making it more like a gas farm with meals. Today it is this famous agritourism, very much the fashion. Then nobody knew about this idea. We started it as a small restaurant. We made crescentina, our little fried breads, and our wine, and it grew. The values, the enormous values that came to me when we started restoring here were that the humble things were most important. The things about our senses, like the stones on that path. You don't put in new ones. You let the old ones be. We heat the barns where we eat with the terracotta stoves our grandparents used because they work and they are handwork. This was most important to me. These were the things always misunderstood. Humble and simple were never valued in the past.
Paola, if I remember correctly, you said that at first when you wanted the farm women to cook their traditional dishes, they didn't want to. They did not want to cook. It was beneath them.
Certo, sì, certo. Siamo già avanti con la storia.
Sì, sì.
Quando
oh, yes. The women had great traditions, handwork. The pasta made by hand, all our dishes of this part of Emilia. The women of the house, as we say, la res d'ora, the queen, the power of the house, she kept the family alive. But after World War II, when the farmers finally had money, the women didn't want any of that. It shamed them. They wanted to be modern, middle class. Clerking in a store had status. When I asked them to cook their dishes here, they refused. But I saw them as artigiani, craftspeople. They didn't see it. So I paid them much more than they were making. When finally people came here from Milan and Rome and America to eat, when the journalists made articles about their food, they were happy.
Paola, this morning we had, for instance, for breakfast, we had these little bottles that were bottled here of crushed wild plums from your trees, and we had marmalade that was made from your fruit, and cake that's baked right here. Is everything still coming from your land?
Allora, è sempre possibile farlo.
Now, it is always possible to do it if you have the will to do it. It isn't that I throw out the commercial products because they are bad. Some are better than ours. How to explain, Lynn? Listen, I make something, our jam. I make a million jars. And I make a mistake, it's my mistake. I make more and I make it better, fine. Look, the supermarket jam is good, but the point is, what we do here is ours.
Paola, thank you so much for this time. Molto grazie per questo tempo insieme.
Guarda che è servita anche a me.
Look, it's been good for me too. Usually I don't stop to think about these things.
È servita anche a me.
Ah, è vero. So you really, you don't talk a lot about these things? Tu non parli molto di queste cose?
No.
No.
Per fortuna, no.
No, no, thank goodness not. Think how boring I would be.
Capito, sì.
Palabini owns Villa Gaidello, the guest farm outside Modena. Now, to eat there, you have to reserve ahead. By the way, this is a place worth planning a trip around. Now, for information and an essay that I did on Gaidello, check out the website, splendidtable.org. To confess that I first made friends with Hermes Malpighi because of his vinegar. His Tradizionale Balsamico won the Academy Award of Balsamic with the highest point rating in its history. Well, it didn't hurt that Hermes turned out to be kind, charming, and so darn dedicated. Now, I mean, you don't just decide to make balsamic vinegar, the kind that's called Tradizionale. To start, you have to have an attic called an acciaia. You have to have rows of graduated-sized barrels, boil down grape juice, and at least 30 years, not to mention the unique microclimate of Modena province and a part of neighboring Reggio. So when you're around 50, you're ready for the next step, judgment by master tasters, and only if you pass can you get that coveted label, which includes the word Tradizionale. Now, Hermes Malpighi's family started late. It was only in the 1500s. Now his entire estate outside of Modena is dedicated to the vinegar. Hermes even rehabilitates neglected acciaia. Well, he and his equally charming son, Massimo, took us into the acciaia.
This is a small building, and we're up on the second floor, and it's, the rooms are plastered with a creamy color, and these black barrels in rows, smaller to larger. There's a succession of four rooms, and each is small with low ceilings. There are windows on either side that are open. Stones sitting on top of square white cloths that cover the hole at the top of each barrel. On shelves, there are old terracotta pitchers and jugs with corks. And these old terracotta jugs are how they used to store the balsamic when glass was too expensive for families to afford. So they would put them in these terracotta jugs. This is the acciaia Malpighi. Now, Hermes, how old are these barrels? Quanti anni c'è questi barili?
Diciamo che
yes, it's since 1850, this is a five generation in the vinegar world.
I know old barrels are very precious because they develop special flavors, but the vinegar actually eats the wood. I mean, they start to fall apart. How long can you use a barrel?
When the barrel is tired, it's necessary that we build the new barrel around this old barrel. For us, it's very important that the old barrel not retire, never.
I see that these rows of barrels have holes in the top, large holes. There's small pieces of cloth covering them, but there are stones on top of the cloth. Now, why is this?
Yes, it's important that the barrels are open because introducing the microclimate of Modena. And the stone is the stone to the Panaro River, and the legend that this particular stone have inside the mineral that help the product, the vinegar.
Ah, sì. Is there any truth to the legend?
Ma di questa leggenda.
Yes, in all legend there is one part of the truth. In fact, in this case, the Japanese people studied this particular stone and understand that inside are some characteristics that help the product.
And they have to come from one river. There are two famous rivers in the Modena province. They're sort of the borders, and one is the Panaro. And it has to be a stone from the Panaro, not the Secchia, right,
yes,
Massimo?
It's important that it is only to the Panaro.
Right. But look at this. The stone is flat on one side, but on the other side, it's all dished out from the vinegar, right? Yeah. And oh, what you can't understand is you can smell the vinegar in the stone.
It's an incredible smell, yeah.
It's an incredible smell. And so the actual mineral salts that used to fall into the vinegar from the stone would help balance the acidity.
Yeah. So,
it's an incredible story, but it's the true story.
Yes, exactly. I mean, I thought you would make it up, but yeah, you didn't. This is the one of the smallest barrels. So questo è la regina.
Questa è la regina, la più piccola.
This is the queen, the smaller one. Mm. And I pulled back the that cover that you have, the linen cover that covers the hole in the top of the barrel. And what's down there is really interesting. Can you see this? This is really amazing. It's glossy. I mean, it's really glossy. I can almost see my reflection in it. And you can see, I don't know, little particles in it, but oh, it smells like port wine and vinegar.
Poi, se ti specchi, vuol dire che tutto funziona bene.
Ah, Hermes just said, if you can see yourself in it, it says everything is going well. Everything is functioning. Is this your oldest room? Are these your oldest vinegars?
Yes, very older than the others. In the total, there are 3,050 barrels. Come to visit, invitation to visit in Modena and to look, please come.
But the woods each give a different flavor and characteristic to the vinegar?
Yes, the type of the woods is necessary because the part from inside that help to mature in the product. And the vinegar is the really balsamic traditional vinegar is life. Every drop of the vinegar is different.
So the vinegar that you get, the oldest vinegar,
yeah,
will taste different than the barrel right next to it, even if it started with the same grape harvest?
Yes, it's different because, I don't know, because it's the particular weather, it's the miracle.
And the woods change. An older barrel gives a different flavor than a younger barrel?
Yes, also, yes.
It smells like a combination of new pressed grapes. And I keep thinking of very rich old port wine. The smell is sweet and very reminiscent of an old, old vineyard. It's a perfume and it's very intoxicating. Hermes, Massimo, thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you very much.
Grazie. Grazie, Lynn.
Hermes and Massimo Malpighi have the Acciaia Malpighi outside of Modena. And as Massimo mentioned, guests are welcome. And you can also visit other balsamic families in the area. For information, you know where to go. The website, splendidtable.org. It was 1985. Now, we were in the Modena Mountains tracking a particular bread. Everybody told us that we would find it in Rodiano, except that we couldn't get there from here. It's a fly speck on the map, impossible to find. In fact, we finally stumbled on it entirely by accident. Now, Rodiano's a tiny village, a few stone buildings on a high mountain road. But there was Bar Leonelli. It had a bread. Now, it was different from the one that we were looking for. This bread was baked like nothing we had ever seen. We had found tigelli, little rounds the size of English muffins, baked between two hot terracotta discs. Now, Signora Leonelli showed us her fireplace in the backyard. That's where she heated these terracotta discs until they were white hot. Then she'd bring them into her kitchen hearth, and she would stack them, alternating rounds of bread dough with each disc. And then the tigelli was eaten hot with chopped garlic rosemary lardo. So our question last spring was, could we find Rodiano again? And were the tigelli and Signora Leonelli still there?
Well, we finally got to Rodiano. And it's not exactly as I remember it. Looks like they've moved some buildings, or my memory's not good, but It's pretty close. Now, here's Trattoria Leonelli. The sign's new because it says Tigelli and Nocco Fritto, and before it just said bar. So, let's see what I find.
Buongiorno!
Sì, signora Leonelli. Scusa.
Come chiamo?
Molto grazie.
Bene, bene.
E lei ricorda quando
Sì. Mi ricordo, sì.
You remember when I came?
Va bene.
I don't know if you know that I wrote a book about the food of Emilia-Romagna, and I wrote about Bar Leonelli and Tigelli. Io non so se voi sapete.
Venga con me. Venga
con me. She's saying, wait a minute, come with me.
Venga con me.
I'm following her.
Lo conosce?
Oh, sì. There's a picture, I'm sorry, there's a picture of the book and of the title page. It's a reproduction, and it's the story of how I came here. And it's up on the wall in the little dining room that's just behind the bar. And the bar looks exactly the way it looked before. The local people are eating, and they're sitting and talking, and this is, boy, talk about a place that's not touristic. This is it. Thank you so much, signora. Molto, molto grazie per questo. Vorrei piangere.
È un piacere.
Anche per
rivederla.
Me.
È un piacere rivederla.
E anche per me per rivedere lei.
Grazie.
Sì.
Grazie.
Thank you. It's wonderful to be back. But it's changed. Ha cambiato perché, se io ricordo giusto, questo era un po' diverso. Questo posto? No, lo stesso?
Quanti anni?
More than 20 years. Più di 20 anni.
Sì, allora è cambiato.
Ah, sì, un po'. Sempre, do you still make the tigelli with the
era
fire?
Era fuori.
Ah, sempre.
È me lo fa ricordare bene.
Sì, è molto possibile bene. Vedere? È possibile vedere?
Adesso non c'è più.
Non c'è più, non
no,
c'è
adesso
più.
Non c'è più.
So, how do you make the tigelli now? Come è fatto ora?
Adesso c'è una macchina con la terra.
Ah,
lavora benissimo.
Ah, sì.
What she said is that they're not making them the old way anymore. That they now have the terracotta discs that are essentially in an appliance that they get the sense of the stone, but they make them that way. And she kind of said, you know, some of the old ways. And I have to say, quite honestly, I'm really disappointed, but things change. But what's really kind of wonderful to me is that walking in here, I mean, it's exactly as it was. There was a curtain on the door, okay, and this room, which we're in now, which has maybe four tables in it, had it was here like this. And there were farmers sitting here, and they were eating this bread out of a basket, and the bread was hot. And bread's never hot in Italy, and that's how this all started. We had never heard of it. Now we eat. Now the tigelli's going to come. So keep your fingers crossed.
Oh, sì.
Ah, bellissimo.
Ah, bene.
La notiamo?
Sì, sì, ma prendi questo prima e dopo quello o prendi insieme?
Insieme.
Ok. So these are the tigelli, and they look like a flat English muffin. They're hot. Okay, but grab one. Okay, cut it. See? She's saying you can eat it along with. I've never had it served with a main course with the stew.
Trattoria Leonelli is in Rodiano. Coming up, 800-year-old Parmigiano Reggiano meets up with the 21st century and pure gold in the Italian supermarket. I'm Lynn Rossetto Casper. You're listening to The Splendid Table from American Public Media.
I'm Lynn Rossetto Casper, and this is The Splendid Table, the show for people who love to eat. The Splendid Table is brought to you by Super Target. It's Target, now available in food, where you can find the expected and unexpected aisle after aisle, online at target.com/supertarget. Now, we're celebrating our 10th year on the air with two shows we taped in Italy, in the Emilia-Romagna region, the place Italians call their culinary capital, and where I spent 10 years researching the book, The Splendid Table. Well, if cheese is a village's calling card to the world, Parmigiano Reggiano is 76 trombones. Now, for 800 years, it has meant Italy to the entire planet. It has official deity status. Now imagine 800 years of being handmade in a single zone of Emilia, where cheesemakers used to apprentice 14 years to make a wheel of Parmigiano. This is solid tradition. But these days, traditional foods are at a crossroad. You see, with the European Union, you have to define your traditions if you want to protect them. My old friend and Parmigiano teacher, Mario Zanoni, broke new ground here. A Parmigiano scientist, the cheese's leading historian, Mario is an impeccable scholar and immensely patient with my years of questions. We got together in Parma to catch up. Mario, it's good to see you again.
Thank you. It's good for me too, you know.
If I remember correctly, the last time that we talked, and this was years back, you were beginning a scientific analysis of the taste of Parmigiano Reggiano cheese. Now, this cheese has been around for 700 years, and nobody figured out how it tastes?
No, it's not this way. But, you know, sensory tasting is a science which is relatively new. Uh-huh. So it was introduced in Italy in the 80s. So at the end of the 80s, we began to structure the feeling we feel during the eating of Parmigiano Reggiano in a sort of framework, a scientific framework.
So is this a matter of laying out how it smells, how it tastes on the tongue, how it tastes after you swallow it?
Yes, but you have to do in a scientific way.
So you're saying that you're doing this so that then you have an actual portrait or picture of what makes Parmigiano Reggiano, Parmigiano Reggiano.
Yes. But, you know, I tend to be perfectionist. After 15 years of work, I'm not still satisfied because it is so alive as a product. So it's difficult to have a sensory portrait that covers everything. It is very difficult.
Why, though? Why? What are the variables?
Basically, there are 34 different aspects that we can consider in Parmigiano Reggiano. And there are differences connected mostly with the cheese factories. It's not a standardized product. It's an artisanal product.
So give me an example of what this portrait then is.
Which age?
I see what you mean. I see. Okay. Optimum age for most cheeses?
Okay, 24 months.
Okay.
Okay, then you have an intensity with medium high. Then you have some butter, some yogurt. Then you have some fruit, both nuts and fresh fruit.
Okay.
Mostly. Fresh fruit like pamplemousse.
Grapefruit.
Sometimes we have pineapple. It's rare, but it's very good when we find it. And then we have nutmeg. And then, of course, the meat. I met the president of the Japanese Society for Brown Swiss.
Okay, and
the cow. And he told me, Parmesan has a wonderful umami taste.
Umami, yes.
There is in Parmigiano Reggiano.
Okay.
Okay. For us is Dado da Brodo stock.
Stock cube.
Stock cube.
Yes, concentrated broth.
Concentrated broth. That's for smell and aroma. Then you have taste, slightly salty, slightly acidic.
Yes.
And pungent, but not too much. But it has to be pungent. Okay.
But not sharp.
Not sharp. but it has to be punished.
Okay.
Then you have the texture. It should be not elastic, hard, with grainy structure. It should be, should have a low deformability. I don't know.
What is that?
And when you eat something with, like, for instance, butter is has high deformability.
So it melts.
No, that melt should be another characteristic. So to talk about deformability takes too long. So it should be low, okay? Then good melting, but is not melting of fat. Is melting of something is melts in water.
Soluble in water.
Soluble in water. Okay, that is not melting as fat. Is not melting as chocolate in your mouth.
Okay.
And then you should have, of course, at the end, the crystals, the tears in crystals. They are very typical for Parmigiano Reggiano. Okay, that is 24 month old.
Now, I can understand that you can vary that according to the age, and it becomes a different profile.
Yeah.
But the big question is, why all this work for a cheese that is already famous across the world?
Because with this research, we can say, we can state, this cheese is different from the imitation that everyone is producing in the entire world, even in the United States.
So it's really a defense.
Yes. Yes.
And a definition.
Yeah. But for me, it is also to investigate on yourself, because I think that is part of my life.
Mario, thank you.
You're welcome.
That was scientist and researcher Mario Zanoni. Now, the things we consumers rarely ever hear about is what goes on behind the scenes of a food like Parmigiano Reggiano, its legal and political face. Another old friend filled us in. Leo Bertozzi is director of the Cheese's Watchdog organization, Il Consorzio del Formaggio Parmigiano Reggiano. We caught up on the politics over lunch.
Leo, when I came here, Parmigiano Reggiano was already 700 years old, one of the most famous cheeses in the world, not just in Italy. Now, more recently, I understand that the Consorzio del Formaggio Parmigiano Reggiano, which you are director of, that oversees the making of the cheese, has actually trademarked Parmigiano Reggiano in the United States. Why would you have to trademark something that has this kind of tradition?
This is also what we have to do if we want to protect the notorious name against what we call agropiracy. I don't know if it is the correct word in English.
Against it's a vivid word in English.
Imitations.
Yeah.
Imitation. I mean, the notoriety of this product, it is very high everywhere. Verdi and then other important people, they brought their product with them when they traveled. So then, now these products are imitated, and we have continuously to protect them in order to protect consumers. It is very similar to wine production. In France, for instance, there is champagne, and the champagne is coming only from the region of Champagne in France, and then only the wine coming from that area has the right to be called champagne. And for the other food products, for Parmesan cheese, it is exactly the same thing.
How do we know we're getting it, and how do we find the best quality?
Well, Parmigiano Reggiano has some specifications, characteristics, which are officially stated. First of all, there are the seals and marks of origin, which are imprinted on the rind. Only this cheese has those pin dots. And then, second, there are the sensory properties of the cheese. Grainy texture, you see the presence of crystals, those grains that you feel when you chew the cheese, the crunch, yes, which tells you that the cheese was aged for over 1 year, the color, and so on, the fact that the cheese melts, and so on. Well, all these factors and the marking of origin and the sensory analysis can give you an idea of the origin of the cheese.
Leo, what's next? What is the biggest challenge for the Consorzio and for Parmigiano Reggiano now, or what do you see in the future?
Well, the most important concern, if you want, or obstacle I see, it is continue in making a traditional food product in spite of the evolution of the agricultural policy and the international exchange. For us, if competition is based only in terms of price, this means the end for Parmigiano, because we cannot compete in terms of price. We can and we have to compete only in terms of difference.
Leo Bertozzi, thank you very much.
Well, thank you to you, and then I hope to meet you again soon.
Yes, soon. With some Parmigiano.
Yes.
Leo Bertozzi is director of Il Consorzio delle Formaggio Parmigiano Reggiano. And Leo tripped me up when I was first in Parma to learn about the cheese. We'd crisscross cheese country for days, and I'd peppered Leo and Mario with questions, deeply perceptive ones, I thought, until Leo asked, "Lean, have you noticed there are no cows?" Well, he was right. I hadn't seen a cow all week, and for all my deep perception, I'd never noticed. Well, when the grins finally faded, the two guys explained grassland is so limited, farmers cut the grass and they bring it to the cows. Now I picture the bossies on chaise longues doing the kind of bovine equivalent of peel me a grape. Admit it or not, shopping is a major part of travel. I mean, you need gifts for the kids, the boss, the dog sitter, it goes on and on. Well, yeah, I mean, I get my Parmigiano and my Balsamico and all that kind of thing at Prime shops, but for the rest, Italian supermarkets are gold.
Okay, now I'm going to tell you how to scope out an Italian supermarket, okay? There's a handful of things that you want to grab because they're going to be cheap and they're going to be great and they're going to be much less expensive than at home. Right. The first thing is go to the bean aisle, all right, and you want to get bags of beans. They're going to have different names, but what you're looking for is a big white bean that looks like an overgrown lima bean. Now, these are, they taste like meat. They're sweet. They're fabulous for a Tuscan antipasto salad. They're delicious in soup. The classic thing in Emilia-Romagna is you cook those with celery, carrot, and onion pasta. Okay, that's one. Number two, you want a grain from northern Italy, preferably from Tuscany, called farro, F-A-R-R-O. Again, it's dried. It looks a bit like wheat. Utterly delicious. Has a sweet overtone to it. All right, come on, we're going to go to where the pickles are and the preserved things are, okay? All right. Okay, in the pickle aisle, you're going to look for a jar that says funghi porcini sotto olio di oliva. This is the great wild porcini mushroom that's preserved under oil. It's with oil and vinegar. Read the label. You'll see salt, pepper, oil, vinegar. You'll really be able to tell, okay? Wrap this up in plastic or old underwear. It's going to be dynamite when you get it home. Now we're going to go to the coffee. Okay, now look. Coffee can be a little overwhelming because you've got a lot of different brands. But my personal favorite is Lavazza. And they come in these hard vacuum packs. And there's two kinds of Lavazza that I like, okay? One is in a gold package with a red label, and it says Qualità Oro, O-R-O, okay? That's one of them, and they're dynamite. And then the other one that I really like is a blue and red package, and it says Lavazza Crema e Gusto. Those are the two you buy. You take those home. Now I want to show you the two last things you cannot leave Italy without. Come on, more dried stuff. I want to take you to the rice aisle. You wouldn't believe this. One of the big changes I've seen, there is fresh pasta in the refrigerated section that looks so good. It is absolutely incredible. Okay, now we're heading into the dry aisle. And over here, you're going to see boxes that are marked riso, R-I-S-O. And what you want to do, okay, is look for a rice from Mantova, M-A-N-T-O-V-A, and it's called Vialoni Nano. It has two names, Vialoni Nano. It's very hard to find in the United States. It makes great risotto, and it's fabulous in soups. And it's it's 190 euro. So for, let's see, how much is this package? This is 2 pounds of rice for somewhere in the neighborhood of about $3, maybe. That's unbelievable for rice. And again, easy to transport, nothing can break. A really nice packaging. Okay, last but not least, this is my mother load, okay? And I don't want anybody laughing at me, but it's tuna fish, because you can find the greatest tuna fish here in olive oil. Let me show you now. Over here, okay, tuna fish in jars, tuna fish fillet, tuna belly. Now, if you like the eye of the rib steak of tuna, you want to look for the word Ventresca on the label, all right? This one happens to be Spanish. I could care less. It's a really good brand, Consorcio. And this is not cheap. This is about $9 for something like, trying to find the amount of the weight of this. It's $9 probably for the equivalent of 6 ounces, and it may sound ridiculous. This is $16 in the United States. Great treat. You just eat it with a little lemon in its own olive oil. Now, if you want to save a little money and still have great tuna, one of my favorite brands is Asdomar. It's A-S-D-O-M-A-R. It's a red box with blue letter. And I always buy the filetti of tuna, okay? And that's a bit cheaper. That's going to be $5 for essentially a can of this. Okay, so I mean, here's my take. You know, some of my favorite stuff that I always buy when I'm in Italy, go to the supermarket, pick them up, and I give them as gifts. You know, I mean, who can't resist a great bag of rice from Italy? I just don't think Duty Free is going to be sponsoring this show. Now, that was a Conad supermarket, by the way. And you can find a photo tour of our trip and get a special work night menu from Emilia Romagna on the website, splendidtable.org. Well, guys, that's my Italy. Thanks for joining us. And remember, you can call us anytime. The number is 800-537-5252. And until next week, let me leave you with a quote from that Emilia Romagna native, Federico Fellini, the filmmaker. Now, he said, "Life is a combination of magic and pasta." The Splendid Table is produced by American Public Media and brought to you by SuperTarget. Everything you heard here today and so much more can be found on our website, splendidtable.org. And while you're there, be sure to sign up for our weekly e-newsletter, Weeknight Kitchen. It's our attempt to simplify your kitchen life midweek. Register for it online, splendidtable.org. Our producer is Sally Swift with Jennifer Russell. Our technical director is Jennifer Lubke. Mitch Hanley so nicely recorded our Italian adventures. And by the way, he's a good driver. Our website is managed by Judy Graham and Julia Schrankler. Thanks for celebrating our 10 years on the air, and here's to 10 more. Be sure to join us next time. Thanks for tuning in. I'm Lynn Rossetto Casper.
American Public Media.